crazy, stupid hot with a chance for showers. That's pretty much it. 6:13 now. And we're joined by Jesse Holcomb, a professor of journalism and communications at Calvin University, also a former associate director of research at the Pew Research Center. And I'm asking you all at 504-260-1870 to text in and let me know if polls affect who you decide to vote for or not. Do you consult the polls to see who's leading, who's not? What do you use polls for? And do they ultimately make a difference in deciding who you vote for? They don't for me. I don't care. I make up my own mind, and then the polls be damned. Jesse Holcomb, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. It's good to be back with you.
Thanks for taking the time. Tell me about what's going on with this fake poll that we know about in California, I guess it is, huh?
Yeah, so this has been catching some headlines lately. There is a firm called Median Strategies, and they recently revealed that they had released some polls, particularly in the LA mayoral race, as well as in the Wisconsin U.S. Senate race, that were actually designed, that they were essentially fake polls designed to expose just how easily fabricated or manipulated results can sort of spread through the information ecosystem. So that, again, this sort of self-admitted social experiment that raised a lot of eyebrows because, for one, this firm didn't offer a lot of explanation as to really why they decided to do this and what sort of social benefit it actually would result in. And it comes at a time, Tommy, when, you know, a lot of people are looking to polls for some signals in all of the noise. And there's a lot of skepticism about public election polling these days. And really, what does this benefit the public discourse and the public interest at the end of the day, in a moment when people are looking for something to trust?
What do people look for in polling when they are trying to decide who to vote for? What difference does that make as to whether or not they think the candidate is their optimum choice?
Well, for one, there's, you know, in a close election, if the polls show that a couple of candidates are really neck and neck, that can potentially activate the base to get out and donate more, to hustle more, to get out the vote for their preferred candidate. So, you know, there are political scientists and others who will argue that what the polls are showing in a race can actually impact turnout or enthusiasm in one direction or another. So, I mean, the really, at the high level, Tommy, polling matters. It does matter in a democracy. It's a way for the people to sort of speak into to have a voice. It's a way for elected officials to sort of take the temperature of the public. And sure, candidates care about polls. You know, that's why they hire pollsters to assess how things are going in their race so that they can decide whether they need to pivot or stay the course. But polls also allow candidates to respond to what the public seem to be saying. So they do matter, and we need high-quality polls. There is a question of whether there's too much attention by the media to the polls in an election season.
One thing I've never thought about before is the history of polling. How old is this? How far back does it go?
You know, polling is not an ancient discipline. We're talking really the last 100 years or so, Tommy. And, you know, there's the famous story of the Dewey defeats Truman headline. Mm-hmm. It was Literary Digest, I believe, was the publication who had this is you know, quite some time ago, polled their subscriber base on who they were going to vote for in this presidential election. And the results of the poll, they published these results And wouldn't you know it, the results were skewed because the subscriber base of Literary Digest was skewed. It was not a representative sample of the American public. Ever since then, the sort of modern science of public opinion polling and election polling has improved and been refined over the years. I mean, we had many decades of live telephone polling, companies like Gallup, right? And others, and that worked really well, Tommy, when everybody had a landline in their house and people were actually willing to pick up the phone and talk to a pollster. A lot has changed in the last 20 years as we have entered an era of mobile-only households and an increased era of skepticism about pollsters and picking up the phone in general. So the election polling, but the public polling industry has really had to change and pivot and innovate. And at the same time, there's been a lot more, it seems to me, attention by the media on what polls are telling us about what might happen in a race. And in my view, polling is seen as this sort of precise science when really, you know, there's only so much you can do to try to predict what the electorate are going to do in the future.
It all goes to sample, right? The sample that you have, is it representative or not?
The sample matters. That's one important thing. So if your listeners are out there trying to figure out, well, you know, I saw a poll the other day. Can I trust it? You know, I'm hearing about these fake polls and all this other stuff. So a sample matters. A larger sample in general is going to be perhaps a sign that your poll is higher quality. At the same time, a big sample isn't any good unless it is actually representative of the larger public. And there are all kinds of ways to do this, to use the U.S. Census benchmarks as a baseline against that poll. And pollsters can do quotas and this sort of thing. You want a smaller margin of error, and we're not going to get too deep this early in the day into all the science. But I guess one thing I would say, because you don't have to be a social scientist to necessarily, you know, figure out whether I can trust this poll or not. But what you do want to look for is, if you're looking at a poll and it's being reported by your local or national media, you want transparency. You want the pollster to be forthcoming about their methods and how they conducted the poll. You know, there are other, you know, there are trusted pollsters and there's less trusted pollsters too. But I guess bottom line, Tommy, is I would say, if you're a listener, if you're trying to figure out what's happening in an election or in the public at large, don't lean too heavily on any one single poll. You know, even the best pollsters are going to, at best, give you a snapshot or a rough sketch of what the public are doing. I would say take a page from Tommy Tucker's playbook, right? You know, as a voter, you have a voice, you can have a say in the future of your community, your state, your country. You care about certain issues and assess the candidates on their policy positions, their integrity, and their character, less so on perhaps what it seems like the rest of the electorate are doing.
And Professor, look, just to be clear, it took me 6 semesters to get through 2 stats courses, so you go as deep as you want. I'm not going to understand it anyway.
All right.
We'll take a break. 621 traffic now, WWL. 627, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Jesse Holcomb, professor of journalism and communication at Calvin University, former associate director of research at the Pew Research Center, about a company that put out fake polls in multiple states as part of what they say was an experiment. So, Professor, somebody texted in and said, and it's a long text, but basically what they said is they don't believe in polls. That's why whenever anybody contacts them, they give them as much misleading information as possible. And I'm laughing because, well, that could be why the polls aren't accurate, if you're deliberately misleading them. Has that changed the polling process at all, where people are trying to play polls now or trying to maybe shade it one way or the other? Professor, do you have me on mute, maybe? Professor hung up. We'll pick him up. We'll take a break, and not take a break, but we'll reconnect with the professor here. Meanwhile, I'm asking you to text me at 504-260-1870 about the polling process. And it's interesting that text I just read about you deliberately trying to mislead the pollster, but then you're complaining that the poll is not accurate. Well, you're kind of doing it, right? So 504-260-1870, do you care about polls or not? And I don't. I just make up my own mind about who I think is the best candidate or what is the best policy, and then I go from there. Jesse Holcomb is back with us. How you doing, Jesse?
I'm doing great, Tommy.
Okay, so somebody texted in, I don't know if you heard this or not, and said that they don't believe in polls. That's why they try to mislead them every chance they get whenever they get asked a poll question. And that kind of like is a self-fulfilling prophecy there. Have you found, or has the industry found the public to be sabotaging polls, or at least aware of them, and that is not or affects the responses that they get?
Yeah, Tommy, there are researchers and pollsters who are constantly trying to refine their technique to try to catch things like this, people sabotaging or punking these polls or prank responding. And yes, while that is a problem, the bigger problem actually is what we call affective polling response, which is when people respond to a poll based on their sort of, it's an emotional response, not necessarily an accurate response in terms of, say, who they're going to vote for. It's what they're, it's based on sort of an emotional reaction. And there are also other concerns, Tommy, with polls where there might be a candidate on the ballot who it is on sort of socially unacceptable or unpopular. Pollsters were really worried about this. Actually, when Donald Trump first became a candidate, they were worried about what was called the shy Trumper effect, which is people who supported Donald Trump but were embarrassed to say so to a pollster.
Let me ask you real quick about results of elections. Can these fake polls have people questioning the legitimacy of election when Mueller polls said he was ahead by 20 points, now he lost by 10?
Yes, that has certainly happened, and candidates have exploited this too. Tommy, you know, someone who perhaps lost an election and is less than willing to accept the results might say, well, the polls had me up, so I don't know what happened. And so then polls can become an instrument to exploit some uncertainty in our broader system. And that is a concern, Tom.
Thank you, Jesse. Appreciate it as always. Jesse Holcomb, professor of journalism and communication at Calvin University. Text me at 504-260-1870. Let me know, do you pay any attention to polls at all when it comes to deciding for whom you're going to vote? We'll talk to Mike Strain when we come back right now. Time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. Thursday morning, 6:46, 14 till 7. That's when we talked to Mike Strain, Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry, and today is no exception. How you doing, Dr. Strain?
I am doing excellent. How are you?
I'm hot, Mike.
It is very, very hot. You know, and we really need to talk about that. In some areas, heat indices get up over 115. As of yesterday, and probably more today, we have 22 parishes now have declared a burn ban due to drought. A significant portion of Louisiana is now in a drought, specifically more in North Louisiana and the very South Louisiana. But we have a lot of areas now that are in abnormally dry and then into moderate drought, what's called D1. And so those burn bans are very, very important. What's happening across the United States and significantly in Europe is that it is affecting the crops. It's causing some quality issues in the northern parts of the United States, especially in the northern parts of the Midwest. But then again, the crops are coming in real fast, so they are maturing very quickly. In Europe, France has lost 50% of its corn crop.
Wow.
And so have the surrounding countries. And what's happening That combined with the issues between the Ukraine and Russia, which have been in the last few weeks, have destroyed each other's grain export facilities. So no grain is leaving the Black Sea is driving commodity prices up in the last 10 days. So there are effects of the weather. And of course, with this very, very dry weather, and as you travel, I was traveling yesterday to Lake Charles. We had a meeting of the Forestry Association, but I was looking at the rice fields and those crawfish ponds, and they were dry as a bone, and you could see that the ground was cracked. So it is significant, and so we need to conserve water. But please, everyone, they really, when there's a burn ban, recognize that and don't light that match, because the conditions are such that wildfires, and that's what happens when you have these burn bans, it's for a reason, because a fire that you may think it's small and can't get out of hand, a gust of wind, and it gets in the grass and it gets pushed, and then we have wildfires, and so we are gearing up for that.
Mike, is that France corn crop thing and the Black Sea grain issue, is that going to eventually register with us at the grocery store?
Yes, it is. And so if you look at the prices today, and I had a very good discussion with a number of people on the beef prices, that will be reflected in 6 months to 18 months from now. If you look at the cost of grain and the availability of grain, if you look at, for instance, in beef prices, that's going to have a long-term effect, and that will affect us over the next 6 months. To 18 months is where you will see the price of corn and beans reflected in the grocery. Grocery inflation continues to be a huge issue, and the recent consumer reports, the grocery inflation was over 3.6%. Again, the bright spot there is poultry. Chicken has come down, and we've seen that in the last really 10 days, and that happened because the big major poultry companies anticipated a larger consumption of chicken. They planned that because of the price of beef. Mm-hmm. And what happened when that did not occur, there's currently an oversupply of chicken, which has driven down the price. Now, that is temporary until that's consumed. And we've also seen in the last week that Tyson has closed a number of its processing plants for across the United States, simply because they don't have the volume of beef to put through there. And hopefully that is just temporary until that situation changes. But I think the beef situation, we're going to see the prices actually increase over the next year. I think poultry prices will probably level off, but will be driven somewhat in the long run once the supply is, the oversupply is consumed by the increased cost of grain and overall, just the overall input inflation. So we're fighting input inflation. And at the bottom line, the end of the day, that's what's reflected in the grocery stores, as well as the price of fuel. There are fuel surcharges, and I saw yesterday looking, diesel prices at $5.85 in many areas, $5.75, at these truck stops. And that's what's fueling, the transportation. So energy costs are a big part of that, but overall inflationary costs on what we call the input side drives it to the final place, which is at the grocery store.
Mike, when we talk about prices on beef and we talk about the prices that we were paying, 2 years ago, we'll never see those prices again, will we?
I don't think so, because one thing about inflationary price, it generally sets, as we call it, the bottom of the bar. And so what we hope, what we've got to do, we've got to have income catch up with inflation. So we have got to increase people's income and hold those cost pressures flat to where our actual buying power goes up. And that's, and the biggest challenge when we talk about, why young people aren't buying homes, for instance, it's not the interest rate. When I first bought my first home, and probably when you did too, my first home was at 12.1%.
13.5, Mike.
That's right, 13.5. And well, if I added the 10% stock I had to buy and Production Credit Association, I think it evens out to about 13%. Mm-hmm. But we were able to pay it. We were able to pay it because we didn't have the cost factors on every other aspect of our lives and those things that you have to consume. And so we have to look at the overall ability based on what everything else costs. So simply bringing down the interest rate is not going to spur the ability or create the ability for our young people to buy homes. That's one of the issues and discussions we've been having in the timber industry. And so it is difficult, but I don't think we're going to see those grocery prices come down because, again, it sets the bottom of the bar. Income's got to catch up and that. So we're working on a number of things. And, of course, I was, you know, with my friends in the Forestry Association. I am the commissioner of forestry as well. And one of the discussions that we're having is that overseas, for instance, in the United Kingdom, 10% of their energy comes from wood pellets. And they're discussing building a data center next to their big cogen facility there in England and York to use wood pellets for energy for the data center. I said, you know, why don't we do that here? Because we have the wood pellets. And again, that's carbon friendly, and that would be another way to grow our economy and put more dollars back into our citizens here and everyone involved in the $1.6 billion a year timber industry. So we have to grow our economy, and we have to grow it in such a way as it doesn't drive up the cost of inflationary cost of everything else. And that's how we get back to where, you know, the food costs are at the appropriate level of our income.
Every dog has his day. Next Wednesday is National Dog Day. A word about our furry friends and keeping them alive and comfortable during this heat stretch, Mike?
Well, I think for Teddy, you know, and Hootie here, every day is National Dog Day.
Yeah, you got that right.
Every day, right? What? Yes. And the thing is, with this extreme heat, you've got to be careful. They can get overheated very quickly. And I've seen animals get heat exhaustion in the back of a moving pickup truck when it's even this heat. So, you know, for instance, here, if Hootie's outside, Hootie has a fan. And, of course, you really pay attention. Make sure they got plenty available cool water.
Yep.
And keep an eye on them, right? And because, again, our furry friends, especially if they live like us now most time in air conditioning, they're not used to this heat. And they will push themselves chasing a squirrel or, you know, or out there with other activities. So, again, please take care of our furry friends. And heat is real, and we all need to be careful.
I let Teddy in because he helps me balance a checkbook.
Oh, yes, I'm sure he does.
Very smart dog.
Yes,
Thank you, Mike.
Well, go make some more kibbles for Teddy.
I'll do that. Thank you. I think he might be embezzling a little bit, as a matter of fact. I'm not sure. Thank you.
That could quite well be. Yes.
Yeah.
But what are you going to do, right?
Right. What do you do, Mike? He gets up every morning and tells me goodbye, so he's got that going for him. Thank you, Mike Strain. Dr. Mike Strain, Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry, 655, 5 till 7. Traffic now, WWL.